So Jeremy had a article, a Jungian article that says that temperament is developed in within inside the womb, and that before birth. And so the question that sparked to mind, because that's about your natural type temperament, how about your social temperament? How about DCNH? When does that start to develop?
That's a really good question. And I don't know the answer either. There's a little bit of a kind of rabbit hole in that, because it also gets into the like what actually even are the DCNH subtypes. Are they more like just like how far could you go? Like we normally break it down into 4 subtypes, but could you theoretically break it down into 8? Could you eventually break it down into 16? They also change over the course of life as well. The DCNH subtype, it's not actually necessarily a constant. Like it sometimes changes, especially in areas of life where there's great stress, like adolescence or a midlife crisis. I guess in order to even answer that question, maybe we need to philosophically clarify what type and subtype are. Like, do they come from us? Obviously they relate to our physical being, but to what extent are they also socially constructed, and kind of how far can you go with the subtypes as far as dividing them?
Sure. Would you say, if we were just staying on the topic of 4 subtypes, and would you say it could start to develop, or someone can type someone's subtype at the earliest age of like 1? Do you think that is possible? But then would that be a static thing, because then when there are 2 or 3 that can also change, right? Which would kind of go against Galenko's theory that it takes a while for them to develop.
I guess that's a question we'd probably take more of a diagnostic expert to answer. Like, it would be interesting to try and type a lot of kids and see just how much specifically you can get from them. I mean, I think you can see the sociotype young. I saw Galenko talking about that in the comments section, or Galenko or Anastasia. Someone was asking if they could type their kid, and they said that they do that. But yeah, I mean, the way that subtype is described is basically like a stable functional profile in a way. I would think that probably if you had a socionics type that's much expressed, it might have to express itself through a subtype. They probably there would be one, although I don't know how easy it necessarily be to tell at like a kid being like 3 years old, for example. Like, I don't actually know how easy it would be to tell their sociotype. Like, I don't know how young they do it.
So I believe I read an article that Galenko has. I believe it was one of his FAQs, and he said that type can be distinguished at birth. And you can see it as evidently as the age of 3, but even before that, you will be able to tell. And type is innate. So if, based on what you said before, if we can probably tell the social type and the subtype, it's probably at the similar time, then probably we can also identify their subtype as well as when we can identify their type. But unlike the type, the subtype will change. So if it's not working for them, just like if it was going through if they're going through a harsh troublehood, maybe that they weren't be able to fully develop in those first 1 or 2 or 3 years, then it would constantly change into something else that fits it to go ahead and suit it more. Hypothesis, speculation. But I have seen, just through my personal observations, that at the age of 3, it's you can start discerning type, and they do have a preference. For example, you will see either huge introversion or maybe like more like an ambivert with a kid. Like, the kid is going ahead and holding on to its mom all the time, and you know it's a clear, strong introvert because it's comparing and contrasting things between its own, what it's seeing, and then evaluating what it's externally seeing. However, but it's holding tightly to its mother, and it's having its mother do and initiate and contact and having sure that she's going to do everything first. However, there's some other kids that are also introverts that are also evaluating, but they're a little bit more contacting. They're a little bit more socially extroverted, and they will go ahead and leave their mom's hand for a little bit, do some exploration, but then come back and then reevaluate. So it would kind of go like that little ambiversion would kind of go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Where the clear extroverts, the contacting extroverts, they will go ahead and they will never touch their mother's hand so much, only when they need validation. They will go ahead and explore around, get into fights, go ahead and do all the things that they want to do, and then almost never really look at the, go ahead and introspect so much, because they're just going ahead and getting back into it, getting back into it, getting back into it. And so you can kind of see those like different dynamics in a preschool. Even early as a preschool, there's different varieties of those kind of kids. And so that is in just a comment that I wanted to just put out there. Even when you start observing preschoolers, you can just see like the different temperaments and how their social temperament can really affect different kinds of introverts and different kinds of extroverts.
Yeah.
But just wanted to ask you that question, if you perhaps ran across a Glinko article. But I heard or I saw that you recently posted a question to Glinko. What was that question?
To Glinko?
Yes.
He did respond to a question of mine recently about philosopher. I was talking to him about the type of someone named philosopher Friedrich Schelling, a contemporary of Hegel, because he typed Hegel as a mentor of the normalizing type. And I'm just really interested in philosophy and people like Hegel and Schelling. And I was curious if he wanted to type Schelling as well. And I wrote a lot about it and he gave me a response, and part of that response was just mentioning that we didn't end up coming to a conclusion on Schelling's type. He hadn't studied him enough as a person, because it's hard to tell type just from someone's works, according to Glinko. But the work, he says, their works revolve around their accentuated function. But we kind of narrowed it down a bit that mentors and critics, he was explaining, are types that show up most often in philosophy. The types most inclined to become philosophers in his system. And so we thought that Schelling was probably one of those two types, that he had dialectical algorithmic thinking, because those types are the best at seeing contradictions with abstract categories. He wasn't sure whether he was maybe, he said Schelling probably has a harmonizing subtype, but based on we know about him, but probably mentor or critic. And he was explaining that some of the reasons that mentor and critic also kind of reach out to one another, because you know, one's like a hysteroid, one's sort of a schizoid, and they can readily understand the information from one another. And so they often work together on things.
There is one of the common misconceptions, and maybe you can clear it up because you are familiar with more of the differences between the subtype and the X-situated functions. Because a lot of people do get confused, because Glinko did release the early DCNH article back when he did that, that it said that, certain types have strengthened functions. But as we understood with his later releases, that is not true. Is that correct?
Heather, can you repeat that last part?
The last part is subtype from his first article. He said that certain subtypes went ahead and they strengthened certain functions. But as we understood in his later articles and when he published the multiple psyches, it's actually the profile that has all the strengthened functions and not in the subtype. Is that correct? And can you maybe elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah. You know, I'm not always necessarily clear on that term, but what he means by the profile. You know, it's actually funny. I just asked him a question another question, which apparently he's going to answer after this weekend, because also relates to some of the things he was discussing at his club about the relation between subtypes and accentuations, because it is a little bit confusing. And I was asking him, for example, if you have, say, let's say a harmonizing subtype, and let's say you develop an accentuation of structural logic for a long time, which is not in the functional profile of the harmonizing subtype, would that eventually, if you really honed in on that accentuation and had it for a long time, would that eventually change you into a normalizing subtype? So I don't necessarily know the answer to that question, but he's going to answer it. That said, I guess the difference between the subtype and the accentuation, as I do understand it, is that the subtype is something that's just generally more, it's semi-stable, he calls it, because like he said, you know, it can change throughout life, but it takes a very extreme situation for it to change. It's more like a kind of background state that makes certain functions energetically easier to use and certain functions a little energetically more difficult. But then the accentuation can be a lot shorter. It can be a period of like weeks or months or something like that, or years. But it's where you're focused more on a particular aspect of life, even like kind of obsessed with it. It can be like a kind of a complex associated with it. Because you're trying to adapt to some communicating environment more directly, more on the surface level. But yeah, the exact distinction between them can get a little bit confusing, especially if you get into like 8 subtypes or something like that. And that's the other thing I asked him in my question, because if you had 8 subtypes, at that point, it starts seeming a lot like an accentuation. But I don't know.
I'm going to go ahead and ask the same question to Jeremy to see what his perspective is. Because we understood from, or Gulenko went ahead and released his first article that said like the subtypes and certain functions are being strengthened. But then he went ahead and clarified that in the later articles and in his multiple psyche articles that the subtype is not where accentuation happens. It's in the profile. And strengthened functions are the cause of whatever you're working on right now and not on whatever you are enhanced. I believe that is the term that he calls for subtypes now. Functions are enhanced, but they are not being strengthened. And the question was like, is that true? There's no strengthening there. There's no accentuation there. And what does it mean, enhanced TI for a normalizer?
Okay, that's a big question. I'll try to parse out my own understanding as well as I can. It gets really tricky because Blanco does change his mind sometimes. And it gets really kind of like, well, this is subtype versus, you know, profile. And then there's, like I said before, like, I like his work of there being type variants. Like there's something born where it's like, you know, like I think I'm an intuitive LLI, but not necessarily a creative one. I don't think I'm creative at all, you know, but you know, accentuated intuition, but not the ECNH creative type or, you know, anything like that. So it gets really kind of confusing because I don't know, there's a lot of layers there. And I think that what you're saying about the TI accentuation being predominant, I believe that Glenko says that it can result in subtype change. That, you know, if you're a harmonizer and you start, you know, join the military or something like that, like this one of Glenko's examples, that you can change your subtype in that way. I don't know, for me, that kind of makes it less interesting as a, in theory, because it's like, it's so changeable and kind of up to the whims of people and, you know, their current circumstances. That's kind of like as interesting to me as studying the weather. You know, so well, I'm here to study climate, not weather. You know, if you understand that.
Like, yeah.
So when it gets to like, oh, it's so changeable. Like, well, I don't know. It kind of loses kind of magic for me, which is why I've kind of like backed out from DCNH lately. And I'm waiting for Glencoe to like iron some of the stuff out, because it seems pretty up in the air, especially if you read his old articles. Like, what was he talking about? And like, you ask him questions like, oh, I understand this. He's like, no, no, you don't. Like, what? So I know there's something there. I know what it is. And I don't think Glencoe quite has figured it out. And he's working on it, and you know, respect for the fuck out of him. Sorry, I'm being any rambly.
There was a interesting thing that you said in Speculative the other day. I think it's a little bit controversial, but we should go ahead and address it, because I think it's an interesting content piece. And Mitchell, you can go ahead and comment on this as well. But you said that later in his later years that Glencoe might have had a subtype shift to normalizing, and that you could come up with a argument for that. I'm very interested to hear what your argument might be, if you do have one.
Well, it's mostly drunk in any speculation argument, as well. I don't know. Reading his, I call it his mill years, where he's really just like trying to push the envelope and breaking away from old Model A and get into like man as a system of types and talking about the Leary stuff and just really getting kind of out there, which I really like that stuff. And his stuff where he's talking about like figuring out the writing economies, that stuff's really good. That's what I like. His later stuff is, I like it too, but it's like kind of too much on DCNH, and you know, it's a researcher doing humanitarian socionics, and like that's kind of weird. But I really liked his really kind of middle years. And he's kind of, that seemed like much more creative way to spend that in the middle years. That's stuff I really like reading. Now, like, I don't know, just being an LII as well, it seems like in books on the humanitarian thing is more normalizing. It's more FITI. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just, I just see the shifts in his work that I kind of want to build.
Right. And do a little bit more of the creative stuff and push the envelope and do something more interesting.
Yeah, because there's lots of work to be done. You know, I think he's not doing good work, but I like the other work better.
I agree. Mitchell, did you have anything to comment on maybe his subtype shift, or did you notice anything, or do you still think that he is still a creative?
It's funny, actually, I never even knew what he thought his subtype was. So is that what he thinks he is, creative?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I guess, I mean, I don't know Glencoe that well. I don't know what he behaves like in his everyday life. I guess one thing I could add, though, that I did actually have an experience a little bit similar to Jeremy's in that I mentioned in one of my last answers that I was trying to talk to Glencoe about philosophy because he seemed like he was kind of into that. But when I tried to talk to him about it, I did appreciate the answer he gave me. So it's not that I was that dissatisfied with it, but he did kind of brush me off a little bit on that and say, I don't really deal with topics related to philosophy right now. I focus mainly more on behavior of the types in everyday life and business. So he didn't want to talk too much about that. So, I mean, that definitely seems kind of ignoring. So at the very least, yeah, probably creative and normalizing. But yeah, beside stuff, I guess I don't have much to add.
As an ignoring subtype, and as the only ignoring subtype here, I do apologize for that. But really, if we don't want to talk about it, you're not going to get us to talk about it.